Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Well, hello. Today's guest is someone at the forefront of restaurant design. His name is Ben Kahaya. I probably pronounced it wrong, even though I cracked it. And he's the founder and chief experience officer at Livit Design. What's amazing is every 8 hours, a new Livit Design restaurant opens somewhere in the world. It's amazing, which means he's a pretty busy guy. I think he travels the globe as much as any human being on earth. And anyway, so Benjamin, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm fascinated by what you do and your story.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me. I can maybe start with an anecdote. My daughter has an app that tracks my flights. And she said, "Hey, Dad, you know that you flew from the Earth to the moon last year?" And then I said, "Yeah, honey, but next year I have to fly back."
That's right. And your back probably hurts. You know, I did two cities. You know, I started in New York City yesterday afternoon. I went to Atlanta for the rest of the day and flew back to Harrisburg by the end of the day. I thought I did something, which was nothing compared to what you're doing there. So, but anyway, but through your travels, not only do you do brilliant work that I was able to witness, some in person with you, but we get to see and learn about a lot what's going on in the world. So, just first of all, tell us a little bit about Livit Design. You know, how you started, about you, the whole beginnings.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm an architect by trade and started this company in 98, which is what, 27 years ago or something, and always with the intention of becoming a one-stop shop for everything F&B. It's a strange company, I would say. I haven't seen anything like it where we have chefs and operators and kitchen designers and equipment consultants, but also architects and engineers, and we have DJs and uniform designers. So it's really a one-stop shop for anything and everything restaurant related. And, we maybe for the first, 5 or 6 years, we were mostly in Europe, and then we've grown internationally. We're now in 45 countries. The US is our biggest market. Obviously, it's where we have most, multi-unit restaurants. And that's our focus. We work a lot with private equity. We work a lot with, the world's biggest brands. So sort of scalability and profitability are almost more important than, colors and fabrics, if you will.
That's great. And, it's cool because, again, some of the stuff and the style and design that you bring forth is absolutely beautiful. But then you said it, you're working with a lot of these large brands. And I don't think people might necessarily, attach great architectural design to the likes of like Starbucks, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, Burger King, things like that. But you work with all of them. And then I think when people really do focus, they can see what the design is and how you're bringing that forth and how you're making everything much more operationally savvy. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, probably there's not a single person in the Western world that hasn't eaten at one of our designs. And it's, as you say, it's everything from Starbucks to Ritz-Carlton, right? And I think often, as you say, design or high quality design is attached to the risk cultures of this world, right? But it's equally important in any fast casual and any QSR. I believe that one of the biggest differences between what we do and a regular design firm is that, the actual front of the house, it's the easy part. That's the fun part. The mood boards, the Pinterest, anyone can do that. What is really challenging, especially in scalable brands, is understanding the operations. How do you make sure that you create designs that work, that are profitable, that minimize labor? All those things are often overlooked at from a design perspective. And I think that's really where design really matters, not only in the look and feel of things, but how the engine really runs and works. And that's why I think it's so important that designers understand the business from the inside.
Well, that's great. So what's the one thing you think every great restaurant design has in common?
Well, I think touch the emotions of the guest. We are constantly bombarded by experiences and social media, etc. And you know, when something really touches you close, that's magic. And I think that's the beauty of our industry, right? Hospitality, that we get to touch people's lives and their experiences and their celebrations. So that's something really important. And there's not a magic wand to do that. It's like, oh, create a restaurant design that, you know, touches people's hearts. It's a combination of so many things, and design is one of those components. But it could be the scent, it could be the sound, it could be the thickness of the menu. There's so many small details in creating that holistic experience that is unique. So you really need to work on, I always say that the designer or a good designer should be like the spider in the web. You change something in the operations and it will affect the guest experience. You create a wow moment on the customer journey, it will affect the culinary side. So there's a lot of things and moving parts in a good restaurant design. And that's really what I do think that, you know, great restaurant designs have in common, that there's a red thread, you know, along all these things that, you know, make that cohesive, fantastic experience.
That's brilliant. And, you're a man after my heart. I mean, we do branding, we do advertising and marketing for restaurants. Our job is to drive people to that front door, right? And we always talk about the consumer journey. We talk about the experience, what they're hearing, what they're seeing, what they're feeling, the emotion that we can bring forth. And I think when we talk about this stuff, people think it's all just sort of like maybe marketing propaganda. But it truly is all about that experience from the sofa to the seat in the restaurant, right? And I love, again, whether it's a Burger King or a Ritz-Carlton, I love how you sweat the details. And I think I've heard you speak, and I've seen some of the different lectures you've given. And I know, like, COVID, obviously, was a huge game changer in a lot of things that we've done. It kept us at home. But you're seeing experience come back, right? You're seeing that physical experience becoming much more important.
Yeah, I mean, we have, I think, the advantage of, you know, as you said in the beginning, we open roughly 1,000 restaurants every year, right? All over the world. So we can, it's not that we have the crystal ball, but we sort of see trends and understand what's happening in Asia Pacific, what's happening in Australia, what's happening in the Middle East, in Europe, in the US, etc. And something, one thing that we've seen is a polarization of the industry, right? And I'll try to explain it. So either you play on the convenience side of things. I want it here. I want it now. I go online and I want it sent to wherever I am in less than 15 minutes. Or you play in the experience side, to your point about what do we need to create from an experiential side for people to leave their Netflix and their sofa and really go out and have an experience. And consumers are getting picky. You know, you go out less, and therefore the bland experiences, right? The legacy American brands is a great example. Like, you know, trying to be everything to everyone. Those are the brands that are really, really suffering. You know, really now you need to be niche. You need to create a phenomenal experience. You need to be a driver, or you play completely in the opposite, you know, spectrum and just play on convenience and speed, etc. And that's something that we're seeing globally. You know, the trends used to be more regional, if you will, or you know, continental. Now trends are really global, and that's something that we're really seeing overall. So to your point, you know, not only driving the guest to the experience, but making sure you deliver on that experience is what keeps people coming back.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it's funny. I was just, as I said, traveling, and I was in an airport somewhere, US. And I wanted to grab something very quick to eat and get some coffee. So this was actually yesterday morning. I ran into this diner. They had a menu that was a QR code. Fantastic. No problem. So I do that. So I order my food. I went through this whole thing, and it was kind of like a pain. I just wanted to order some eggs, and it was breakfast. But I did it. I did it. No problem. I don't want the 30 drinks they tried to offer me. I didn't want to 30 different cocktails they tried to offer me. I was just like, get through the thing. They wanted a tip. I'm like, I thought I was supposed to tip on the service. I haven't met a person yet. I haven't seen anything. I haven't gotten food or nothing. But I actually had to program my tip and pay with a credit card before anything showed up. I think sometimes some of the automation can go a little too far. That's my opinion. I mean, I think we lose some of the personal touch and the experience and all that. But anyway, I just thought that was like a weird kind of experience.
I think we're all, it's a very US thing. You know, I was in Vegas the other day and like, I grab a can of Coke from the fridge. I bring it to the counter. I say I want to pay and they flip the screen and say tip. You know, it was like 18, 24 and 28%.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's like, what this is a convenience store, right?
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, one of the things that sometimes operators are getting wrong is that technology and efficiency should be a means to make hospitality better. Make sure mm-hmm. that your employees can actually focus on what customer. People are doing better, right? Yeah. Than machines, rather than take out the hospitality of it. So I think, you know, I often get the question because I speak a lot about robotics and innovation and trends in terms of, you know, what the future of the industry is. And they say, well, you know, we're going to ruin, you know, get out of jobs and, you know, hospitality is going to die. I said, on the contrary, you know, rather than, you know, being in the back of the house in a fridge doing inventory, why don't you go out and talk to your guests, you know, and give them a smile and, you know, ask how the day was. That's true hospitality. And let a machine just manage your inventory. You don't need to sit there with an Excel file and do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. You know, in one of your presentations, I saw it. I might get the name of the company wrong, but I can describe what it was. I think it's called Each. And it was basically the back of the restaurant looked like a manufacturing facility with no people in it. Is that the computerized system that can like learn the menu items and actually make it and clean itself? Did I get that right?
Yeah. So, you know, we're now part of some of the world's biggest projects. I guess you've heard of The Line, this, you know, 170 kilometer long building.
It's incredible. Yeah.
So we're designing some of the F&B there and sort of understanding the future. There's now, you know, pieces of equipment that can do up to 15,000 dishes per day, individual dishes. So they can remember, you know, your Michael, your flavor profile, you know, your spiciness levels, etc. You know, attach a QR code to that specific dish and have it served, and they can self-clean themselves. You know, the evolution of technology is just amazing, specifically if you go to China. I think China's sort of, for the Western world, sort of a black box. We've had, you know, office in Shanghai for many, many years and done business there for many of the world's global brand. And that's really where I see the innovation happening in terms of, you know, not only development of equipment, but embracing of technology in the actual operations. I think in the West, or, you know, specifically in the US, we've just scratched the surface on what, you know, the future is bringing in terms of automation, innovation, and also quality and consistency. You know, there's certain things that machines are really, really good at, is that making things over and over again, repetitive tasks, doing them perfectly, right? And that's tough for humans.
Yeah, I know. I know I have a very poor golf swing, and I know that a simulated golf swing is way better than mine will ever be. So, I mean, there's just certain repetitive things, and to your point, precision, that a machine will be better at. And I know, like, I'll offend the artists out there that are chefs and everything. I don't mean to offend, but I mean, it's just, I was blown away by that machine and what the capability of what it was able to do. Really remarkable.
I think it goes beyond that. If we could, you know, we sort of put this in silos, right? There's equipment in the back of the house. And I always say, oh, people talk about robots. To me, the dishwasher is the best robot out there, right? The only thing is now there's dishwashers with AI that recognize the different dishes, and they take it out of the dishwasher and put it on a shelf to dry. You know, the whole automation process, nobody needs to be a dishwasher anymore. And I doubt that nobody wants to be a dishwasher. It's just a way of starting, right? But the same goes with all the other things that, you know, if you think of music, right? You know, as you know, and we can talk about later, we have our own restaurant innovation labs that we use to test things. Yeah. Spotify uses them to understand the impact of music behavior on guests. So you can actually automate, you know, the music in the restaurants to change human behavior in terms of, do you want them to stay longer? Do you want them to stay shorter? Do you want to upsell certain products, et cetera, et cetera? And that's all automated, right? And that can be connected to how many people you have in the store in real time, et cetera. Another thing is scent. You can change the different scents in the restaurant, and depending on what scent you have, you sell one product or the other. All these things that influence human behavior and, you know, restaurant guest behavior happen without you as a guest noticing it, but also without the interaction of anyone in the restaurant.
Right.
And that's what we see more and more, right? How can some of these processes that traditionally have been managed by the restaurant manager or the AGM or the team members, how can we offload those from their sort of day-to-day task and make sure that somebody centralized or an AI engine does that better than they do so they can once again focus on the hospitality component of things?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I saw one of your examples on the generative AI where people that come into the restaurant would affect what would be on the walls, like what they're seeing and all of that. It's just incredible. And it makes an awful lot of sense as far as that whole immersive experience, how you can really kind of make things personal, fun, interesting, always new. It's truly fascinating. And speaking of, you brought it up, and I definitely want to hit that. Can you talk about the line? That blew my mind. I mean, and what is your role in that? I know it's got to be in the architecturally designed as far as restaurants. Talk about the whole thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm actually flying there, the day after tomorrow. So yeah, it's basically building a country, right? It's in Saudi Arabia by the Red Sea. It's a beautiful, beautiful location. It's amazing. It's pristine. I've been driving those beaches. It's just like fantastic, right? You can't compete with the Maldives. It's building, if we were to build a country or a city with everything we know and everything that we project, what would it be, right? So basically the idea is you take a whole city and you put it in one building and leave 98% of the land untouched, right? And, you create community living where, you have everything you need within a 5-minute walk. So it's really turning everything upside down, and we're helping with the F&B strategy on, what does F&B strategy look like in the future, right? It all started with our restaurant labs. We have, sort of developed a cross-trained, de-skilled operating model where young team members can come in and work without previous experience, but deliver on a high note in a fine dining environment. And we started, building hotels and F&B outlets for NEOM, the different NEOM regions, right? NEOM have several regions. And that's where we started, working more and more into this different giga projects. There's a lot going on that I cannot tell you because it's sort of under NDA in the future. But what I can tell you, it's mind-blowing. And the resources being poured into it are phenomenal. It's, you go there and it's the best of the best, whether that's recycling, energy, water waste. It's really a privilege to be part of that environment.
It's crazy. I do remember this was a big, high, long mirror building, and just it was fascinating. Absolutely,
I mean,
remarkable.
It's the height of the Empire State Building, 200 meter wide. You can have a football stadium up there, 300 meters up in the air, and 170 miles kilometers long. It will be built in phases, of course.
Yeah,
not being
yeah.
built all, but phase one is 2.4 kilometers. So and. A cruise ship can, go through it. It's just, really, really exciting. Yeah.
Well, they say Rome wasn't built in a day. You can't build a whole country, right? I mean, so it's going to take some time.
Exactly. No, and you speak
sense.
Like, you speak to Dubai, and it was the same. Like, we tried things. We tried the islands. We tried the Palm. We tried the second Palm. We tried the Burj Khalifa. It requires a lot of vision to be able to move like a country like Dubai that doesn't have a lot of natural resources to become a world-class, tourist destination. So there's a vision behind it, and it's going to take time.
That's fantastic. All right, so I'll bring it back into more, I'll say maybe a more Americanized pedestrian baseline issues. So, this is something that I'll say we as a company will struggle with because, look, the restaurants, they've had tough times, they've struggled, all right? So there's a lot of tired restaurants out there. There's a lot of restaurants that could use a makeover, a refresh, but it costs money, right? And they're just worried about turnover. They want to get butts in seats. They want to make, what's their daily check and all that kind of thing. I know that design, marketing, advertising, all that stuff, refreshing the experience will make them money. But how do you convince a restaurant owner to take that leap?
Well, when we work with global brands, I always say the same, restaurant design is an investment. It's not a cost, right? What we always try is to, make sure that we make a proof of concept, what we call an alpha prototype or beta, before actually rolling it out, whether that's corporate stores or franchise stores, right? So you can really measure things, right? Because to your point, we could go into a conference and present a beautiful new design and say, oh, this is going to be great for your sales. all right, what's that, right? So what we always try to do is make sure that we're not only delivering on the high quality of the design, but also saying, look, these are the numbers. This is the increase of footfall. This is the increase of, you know, intent to return. This is the increase of intent to recommend. There's a certain part of that that we could do upfront. Now we do, you know, Gen AI, we have Oculus glasses, we have immersive experiences and focus groups, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, the proof is in the pudding. So that would be my recommendation, really, you know, making sure that, for example, when we do a remodel, make sure that you take a store that is an existing store rather than create a new design and a new build, because then you can really measure the pre and post. But always talk about design or marketing as an investment, not about the cost.
Right. And it truly is. I said, a lot of people look at this as like a paying taxes. You know, you have to do it. You don't want to do it, but it's truly, if it's not getting your return, you shouldn't do it. So, I mean, that's really the bottom line there. What do you think, what do most restaurants do wrong when it comes to design?
I think in general, and I've talked to the US, I guess most of your audience is US based. One of the things that we see, especially coming from Asia or from Europe, is, you know, real estate has been extremely expensive outside of the US. Land used to be cheap in the US. Labor, you know, I live in Sweden, it's $28 minimum wage. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like when people are complaining about 15 or 20 in the US, like, I mean, keep them coming, send them over, I'll sign them up, right? So not that we come from the future, but we have been exposed to these challenges before in terms of inflation, high labor, lack of skilled labor, you know, CapEx increases, etc. So a couple of things, you know, first of all, the understanding of efficiency in a footprint. That's one thing that we see a lot in the US. Humongous kitchens, you know, kitchens where, you know, 40% of the restaurant footprint is back of the house. You know, that is only cost, doesn't generate any revenue. How do you make sure that you get back to a 25% back of the house versus 40, right? So the back of the house operating model is something that is often not seen by designers. So it's like a black box, you know, okay, we'll design the front of the house, and then somebody, maybe even a kitchen consultant, you know, comes in and, you know, guess what? Their job is to sell you equipment. So you're going to end up with a Ferrari of a kitchen with a lot of space and a lot of equipment. Well, you don't make money there, right? You make money in the front of the house. So that's one thing. The second thing is the availability of cheap labor, right? You know, a lot of tip credit states, et cetera. So there hasn't been really an incentive to work from an efficiency perspective in the restaurant environment, whether that's layout, you know, how many steps you take, you know, time and motion. So there's a lot of time and motion study done in the back of the house, but not a lot in the front of the house. You know, where are the stations positioned? All those things that you think, oh, it's not important. Well, it's 10 seconds here, 20 seconds there. You know, you go back and punch it into the POS. You don't have handhelds. So the whole efficiency component that we've seen overseas is something that we're finally now, you know, being able to bring to the US because labor is scarce, you know, salaries are going up, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not reinventing the wheel. What I do think that we can do is we can take best practices and global learnings and actually apply them to the US rather than to have to invent everything from scratch.
That's great. And you bring a global perspective to all this, which is really, it's an incredible advantage, candidly. So talk about your lab a little bit. I mean, in my company, anybody you talk to that works in our agencies, they know our core values are respect, innovation, and passion. You got to be excited about what you do. And innovation is one of the core values. We're always coming up with new ideas. Talk about the lab, because I think that's a brilliant concept.
Yeah, well, it's a fun story, right? You know, one of the challenges, we work with the world's biggest brands, right? And when, you know, I remember back in the days, we were talking about AI and automation. And they said, hey, Ben, slow down. We are implementing Wi-Fi. Like, okay, now I know where I have to put the threshold. It was sort of hard to push these global brands to really innovate. So we came up with the idea to say, why don't we put our money where our mouth is, right? Why don't we set up a restaurant that we can use as a lab? And rather than become the traditional consultant where you come and say, oh, you should do this, or I believe you should do that, we could actually come and say, look, we've tried this. And these are the results. This worked, this didn't work, right? So we become peers instead of consultants. So we said, let's open up a restaurant. We decided to open it up in Stockholm, you know, second highest labor market in the world. So, you know, either you're efficient or you die.
Yeah, exactly.
We decided to only hire people that have never worked in a restaurant, right? To make sure that the efficiency was in the model, in the equipment, in the layout, et cetera, right? And then really pack this with all sorts of sensors that you can imagine. But everything happens without the guest knowing. So the guests don't know this is a lab. And not only was it extremely successful from a learning perspective in terms of, you know, the initial objectives, what we did not expect is that we were going to make so much money actually becoming operators. So what was one restaurant became three. So we're in the three biggest cities in Sweden. We started franchising a year ago. We're now in 10 countries. We're going into the US now. So it's awesome. Really becoming a global brand. We got 73 sites in the pipeline. So now I have to balance out the you know, design consultant hat and the operator hat. Yeah. But it also, it's a great way of testing things in different markets. You know, we are in Saudi Arabia and we're opening in Mexico and Buenos Aires and we're in Madrid and we're in Belgium and we're now opening in Nashville. So, you know, understanding how those different technologies, components, efficiencies operate in different markets, it's very, very valuable for us. Beside, you know, the fact that we're building our own global brand, which is extremely fun.
Yeah. Well, you better be careful. You might have a conflict. You'll be like building. Oh, wait, we're across the street from you guys in Madrid. You lose the opportunity
we'll
to redesign.
We'll invite you to come over. Don't worry.
That's fantastic. That's so cool. I love it. All right. So when it comes to those big chains, who's doing a good job? Like who pick an American brand, if you wouldn't mind.
I mean, there's quite a few and in different ways, I would say. You know, I think, you know, in the US, I'm a big fan of Bar Taco. The way they not only create the experience, embrace technology, were very early with, you know, tech adoption. I think they did a great job in delivering the experience. I believe their sort of motto is a day at the beach. You walk into the restaurant and it's really, it transports you somewhere, you know, to you know, Cabo or to whatever that is. But also from a, you know, training perspective, I like both the back of the house and the front of the house guest experience. That's a brand that I really like. I think, you know, And Pizza, we did a great job with them and they had a great run and, you know, unfortunately very leveraged. So when interest rates go up, they're having a harder time. It's not an American brand, but one of my favorites, it's Joe and the Juice. You'll see it in some of the American cities. Extraordinary way of turning a potentially boring job like serving coffee and juices into being something really, really cool, you know, and they hire these good looking guys. Now they have women as well because they've gone too big, but they really said, you know, they did something that nobody else had done before. Their CapEx is extremely low, you know, both in terms of equipment and the FF&E, and they really deliver on a great, great experience. And I think from a marketing perspective, undoubtedly, they do something really, really interesting. So for those listening that haven't seen it, it's one of my to-go brands for a number of reasons, both from operational simplicity, efficiency, you know, can run one of those restaurants with two team members, and deliver on a really good experience, whether that's a kiosk in an airport or an extra large dining room with full service. And they've been able to capture, you know, coffee, juices, and food in one, which is something that Starbucks has struggled with for years.
That's awesome.
And I can go on and on, but you know.
Yeah, yeah. Believe me, this is good. Well, I could talk to you for hours. I am just absolutely. I love what I've seen. Love what I hear. It's just so easy to ignore good design, whether it's you know, the actual architectural design, whether it's the design of the brand. It's so easy to. It's not, well, it's easy to ignore it, but boy, you know it when you see it. And I think that's the thing. It's kind of one of those things. You really know it when you see it and when you feel it. And that's what's going to be successful, especially with people wanting to go back to that experience. So what's a larger, you know, company that's not doing a great job in your opinion?
Well, I think if I go back to my comment before about the brands that try to be everything to everyone, you know, think of all the legacy bar and grill brands in the US. You know, there's a bunch of them, right? You know, just adding menu items, try to be lunch, dinner, all occasions. You know, their audience is literally dying, right? It's you know, you don't see any young people going in there. I think that's really a struggle in a world that is coming more and more specialized, more and more occasion based. Those brands really need to rethink. I read that, you know, TGI Fridays was actually just sold last week to one of their UK franchisees. You know, that whole category is a category that's really suffering and that really need to, you know, take care of their guest experience. And beyond that, who are they? You know, it's lost their soul a little bit. So there's a lot of work to be done there. But they have a scale and an audience that also, you know, make it possible to make mm-hmm. them come to life again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. That's a really good insight. All right. So we'll play, I'm going to play like a little game here. It's like, what's worse? And I don't think there's any good answers here. So, but it'd be great just to hear you fill in the gaps here as far as your points of view on these. So what is worse? Lots of cluttered, irrelevant decorations. Speaking of, I'll say Fridays, I shouldn't say that, but I will. Or a bad floor plan.
A bad floor plan all day long. Yeah. I think the bad floor plan will impact on your P&L. You know, you're gonna, you know, have a higher labor cost, et cetera. And, you know, it's going to impact on the guest experience. So, I will go with that.
All right. What's worse, an exposed service area or bathroom doors that only open in?
Exposed service area. I think the bathroom doors that only open in, it's something that you can live with. It might be annoying, but when you're having your dinner experience and see the service area and they are never pretty, that's something that you'll remember.
Yeah. Especially if they're busy, right?
I've never seen a guest get back to me and say, you know what? Hey, Michael, I went to this restaurant and the bathroom doors opened inwards. I'll never come back again, you know?
But they will see the mess that's in the service area. That's for sure. All right. What's worse, bad lighting or bad carpeting?
A bad lighting all day long. I'm a lighting freak. I think lighting and acoustics are the two things that designers often overlook. They're not well taught in design schools. And when you do value engineering, it's the first thing people cut because you don't see it on the layouts. You don't see it on the renderings. That's right. But I would go with bad lighting all day long.
That's great. And if you have good lighting, then you will be able to see the bad carpet. Without the good lighting, you know, you get the carpet, you can get away with it. So, all right. What's worse, low grade tables and chairs or poor menu design?
Low grade tables, I would go. I think it's, you know, and I'll connect it to the carpet comment before. The things you touch, the cutlery, the table, the chair, the glassware, the plateware, those are the most important things. What's on the floor, what's on the ceiling, what's on the walls is not as important. So if what you touch conveys the sense of quality, that's really very, very important to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So a few years ago, everything's Instagram, right? Everything's taking pictures and all the social media. But you talked about the most Instagrammed restrooms, talking about the doors in the United States. Talk about what made the bathroom so photogenic.
Yeah, so we actually opened one of our labs in Los Angeles. Bad timing, November 2019, so it's not there anymore. But we were gaining one Instagram follower per second when we opened. We won the Best Restaurant Design of the Year award, voted by consumers, by Eater LA, and the second best bar in America. And what we did is that we really wanted to create just an amazing restroom experience. So we, you know, bought this onyx hand sinks that were lit from underneath, and it had like 40 candles under the mirror, and, you know, greenery and art, you know, really expensive art in the restroom. And what really made the difference is that on the mirror, and I hope I'm not going too far politically correct, it said, "You look fucking beautiful." Right?
That's right.
And there wasn't a person going into that restroom that did not take a picture of "You look fucking beautiful" and shared it on social media. So not a recipe for every brand, but you know, just make sure you create something memorable, and don't underestimate the power of restrooms, because when you have a clean, well lit, nicely designed restroom that smells great, that has a really good soap, that really, you know, makes an impression on what you think the kitchen is going to be and what you think the rest of the experience is going to be.
That's great. I need one of those mirrors because I need all the positive reinforcement I can get, you know? And you know, it's funny you say that, but I will say, the Hermitage Hotel in Nashville, downstairs next to the bar, the restroom is incredible. And I remember that. And I'm not, you know, that's just something I will always remember. It doesn't have anything that gives me any positive reinforcement, but it was just incredible. In fact, there was a sign outside. It said, ladies knock before coming in to take pictures. Which I was like, why would that be here? And I went inside. I was like, amazing. Absolutely amazing. So anyway, I think a good bathroom is fantastic and it's important. So what's the future look like for restaurant design? I mean, what's trending? What might we start seeing more often?
So when it comes to restaurant design, and again, I'm not the prototypical designer, only thinking of, you know, the fabrics and the colors and the textures. It's really operational efficiency to me, both in the back of the house and the front of the house. That's really coming big time when it comes to sensors, implementation of technology, frictionless ordering, et cetera, et cetera. So that's something that we'll see. And I can talk for hours about that efficiency part, specifically in the back of the house, et cetera. The second part that we are going to see is a lot more artificial intelligence coming in. You know, at Livit, we have now, you know, a 5-team strong AI team. Just because AI, it's going to be better than humans at a lot of the repetitive tasks, right? Mm-hmm. You know, whether that's comp set analysis, restaurant layouts, you know, optimization of spaces, et cetera. So there's a lot of that that's coming into the design space. But there's a lot of talk about those things. But I do think that, you know, where we started this conversation in terms of the experience, the human touch, that's really going to be here for a while. You know, machines will not be able to do those things for us, at least in the foreseeable future. So I think we need to be aware of the tools that we can use as designers, but really make sure to understand where do we add value, right? Like we were saying, in terms of understanding trends in one market into the other, et cetera, et cetera. That's something that we see. The other trend that I'm going to see, and I'm going to speak specifically to the US, is offshoring. So, you know, since the pandemic, CapEx construction costs are up, 30-40%, depending on states. It's really becoming hard to get the return on invested capital with the CapEx that restaurants are now running at. It's really hard. You know, you can make the P&L work, but how are you gonna, you know, get that investment back? So one thing that we're doing for many brands is actually almost building the restaurants offsite. So this LA restaurant that I mentioned, you know, we bidded it out in California. Bids came in between $3.4, $3.2 million. Mm-hmm. We ended up building it for $1.3. So basically we bought all the pieces from China. We bought them from Europe. We assembled the restaurant in a warehouse in Spain. We shipped it to LA.
Wow.
We sent an install crew and the restaurant was up and running in 17 days. That sort of brands becoming sourcing companies and, you know, installation companies, we're now working with, you know, quite a few large U.S. chains in making modular designs and concepts overseas, right? You might do it in Mexico, you might do it in China, you might do it in Eastern Europe, just to make sure that if there's a tariff coming in one country, you have, you know, a plan B. But that's something that we're going to see more and more because the increase of labor and the increase of construction cost is hitting the U.S. market really, really strong.
It's incredible. And I mean, it's amazing that you can actually build it, ship it, assemble it cheaper than you can build it on site. That's a shame, actually.
Plus the fact that, hey, I'm half Swedish, so we have IKEA in our blood.
Of course.
The fact that you're never going to get the quality that you get in a factory in a nice environment, you know, where you work in, you know, a restaurant environment with local workers that have never done that brand or that assembly before. They have to learn every time. So just that scalability, this, you know, is not as easy for one-off concepts or for small brands. But if you are starting to get regional, I always say, you know, if your ambition is to get beyond 10 or 15 brands, you should really start looking at it.
Yeah, totally makes sense. And, you know, it's funny you brought up IKEA. I wasn't going to bring that up. I was going to try to avoid this whole conversation. But it is, in a weird sort of way, it's a microcosm of like what we're talking about and what you do. I mean, right, the design was impeccable. The user experience, second to none. And I'm going back to like 1980 when I first was exposed to it. I walked in to a store and it's like, this is just brilliant. Everything about it was brilliant. I wanted to buy everything there. I wanted to buy the expensive stuff. Nothing was super expensive. I wanted to buy the inexpensive. I all of a sudden needed things I knew I needed just because the design was so impeccable. And then of course the user experience as you walk through and the layout and the way they showed everything, it comes back to design and experience.
And we've actually just been engaged to, I think we already delivered it, the future F&B experience of IKEA globally. We've done fantastic. It at Livit. So there's, that's awesome. We're closing the circle.
Very cool. And we're actually, I'm talking to them about a project right now, so I'm excited about it. We'll see where it goes. But I've always been just fascinated by the brand. It's brilliant. And it stands for, I think, a lot of things that I'll say are important to me personally. Just the whole experience, the design, the user experience, everything about it is just really impeccable. So, hey, well, I could talk to you for hours, but here, I have one last question that I ask everybody every time. For you, this will be maybe very difficult because you're just literally, your tires barely touch ground and you're off somewhere else. So if you had one final meal, what would you eat, where, and why?
Oh, that's a tough one. One final meal. So,
it can't be the Swedish meatballs at IKEA either.
No, it's not going to be that. No, so it has to be a social meal. What I would do, I would cook paella. I think it's a very social meal because you cook it with friends. You know, you stand around it. It's our version of the barbecue, right?
Yep.
You stand around it and cook it together. I will have it with friends and family. You know, last week we had some friends over and, you know, my stomach hurt from laughs. That's really, the social component of eating, I think, is the important thing, more so than what you actually eat. But that would be, I would eat a paella together with friends and family, have a good laugh, and it could be anywhere in the world.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm like I said, I'm heading to Madrid here in 2 weeks, so I'm really excited about the paella. I'm sure that'll be fantastic. And Ben, I can't thank you enough. I do want to do this again. I mean, I have a million more questions. We could have dove into so many of these areas so much deeper. Phenomenal, fantastic. Congratulations on all your success, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Michael. Look forward to staying in touch.
All right, man. Talk soon.
Have a good one. Cheers.